Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Our guest today is David Thornwill, Group CISO for transportation and logistics giant, DHL. Steve sat down in the ISF headquarters in London recently to speak with David at his home in Germany. In this episode, they discuss the ever-changing role of the CISO, preparing for future threats, the challenges he faces, and the practical strategies he uses to build a culture of security in a multinational corporation with over 500,000 employees.
So, David, thank you very much for joining me on this podcast. You've had a very interesting career. You've been at DHL now for a little while. Tell us your story. Tell us a little bit about how you became the CISO at DHL. What's your background?
My background originally is in IT. That's what I did my undergrad in. However, I spent quite a bit of time before joining DHL in manufacturing and finance, joined the IT function officially as I joined DHL 20 years ago now in Arizona, spent some time there, moved across to Prague, moved to Bonn, climbing, if you will, the corporate stepladder, ended up in a CIO role for our group functions organization. And about 10 years ago, the person who was running our Information Security Council retired. And so I took the position, not knowing a whole heck of a lot about information security back then. Mm-hmm. But over the past 10 years, certainly have increased my knowledge and awareness. And now I am dedicated to that role in a leadership position reporting to the group CEO, which I'm quite proud of.
I mean, I think for a lot of people listening to this, that's probably the ultimate goal, isn't it, for a CISO to have access at that level in the organization? Quite unusual too, I think, for a lot of organizations. How did that come about? Is that a sort of DHL structural thing, or was it something that was really sort of promoted by yourself or your predecessor?
Well, it's a bit of both, partly structurally, because we are so large, you know, 500,000 employees across 220 countries with our divisions that have different business models. Some are asset rich, some are asset light. And so each one of those divisions, being a large company, has its own dedicated CIO, and we don't have a group CIO, if you will. However, right. We do meet in a construct each month called the IT board, which brings together these CIOs, and that IT board is chaired by our group CEO. So that partly structurally, we knew we needed a group CISO because the cyber criminals don't attack divisions, they attack brands. So, right. And that brand is consistent across the various divisions. So we needed to defend the brand. So that's one reason. And then secondly, of course, and especially out of 2017, when NotPetya attacked so many companies, some of them, of course, were in very close to our industry, Maersk and TNT being two of them. And that really brought home to our CEO and the board how instantaneously a cyber attack could stop our business. Famously, I think 9 minutes for Maersk.
Absolutely. It's those sorts of things, isn't it, that tends to focus the attention. You mentioned nearly 500,000 employees. You know, there'll be people listening to this thinking, wow, we're such a large organization. How does David go about ensuring consistent security across so many people? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we have a number of programs that engages people. So of those, 570,000 to be precise, and of those, roughly 250,000, give or take, have access directly to a desktop. The remainder, the other 300,000, are what we call operational colleagues who are doing things like working in warehouses, driving trucks, delivering the parcel to your home with a smile, hopefully. and so we have different programs that engage operational staff who have different needs than, let's say, office workers who are dealing more with things like Office 365 and phishing emails and so on and so forth. Right. So we have these programs. These programs are mandatory and we monitor that. There are consequences for not completing those programs. So if you don't do your regular training, which has to be repeated as well, repetition legitimizes, is a phrase I've learned many years ago, actually from my musical background. So if you don't do your training at the allotted time, then you lose access to email. So that persuades everybody to get the job done. So we have compliance rates up in the high 90%. for those completion rates. So that gives people awareness. And then there are other things that we do, simulations in various facets, phishing simulations. There's a series of campaigns that runs every 3 to 4 weeks, either a general campaign or specific targeted campaigns, targeted perhaps at the HR function, at the finance function, so that we maintain the attention of, you know, threats coming in. And just simulations that we run, you know, we pretend we have a, and luckily it has been pretending so far, that we've had a ransomware attack or some other attack, and what would we do in that situation? So, you know, that A, tests our processes, but also provides a learning experience for those who participate.
I'm interested in that ransomware simulation you mentioned there, not least because we were actually running one here at the ISF this morning. So we had a number of people doing that. So it's very, very sort of topical. I'm interested at DHL, when you run those simulations, is that just for security people or do you involve the business as well in that?
No, we involve the business. In fact, 3 months ago, we had our top executive council, which is the top 60, 70 or so executives, and we ran a simulation with them. So, you know, the executive vice presidents and the board members. So that was across all functions, of course, IT, finance, HR, operations, the supporting functions as well. So we run those. That's more, if you will, a mega one, but also fine-tuned down to specific areas so that we can practice a particular skill or process where we would just engage, you know, 20 people in a particular function. So they scale up and down depending on what we're trying to exercise.
And many organizations tell me that they struggle to get business leadership involved in these sorts of things, really to justify participating. How have you managed to do that at DHL?
Persistence. You know, I would have made exactly the same comment probably 3 years ago, you know, where we would run a simulation and perhaps people who came along were 2-3 levels down from the board level, sort of sent as delegates to take care of that simulation thing for me. But of course, as you know, in a real life situation, it's going to be the top executives that are involved in the incident, in the remediation, in addressing the topic and recovering. And so you need them there in the, if you will, simulations, the rehearsals as well. And over time, we, you know, as I say, the mask and TNT thing brought it home. But as we've rehearsed more and more, as our CEO, our board members have emphasized that to their reports as well, we've, if you will, climbed up the hierarchy step by step.
So how long do you think that's taken? About 3 years, I think you said?
Yes.
So anybody listening to this who aspires to have that similar kind of participation should really be preparing themselves for the long run. It's not going to be something that you can accomplish overnight.
Quite. I mean, I don't know whether I would say it's 3 years or whatever, but tenacity, just sticking at it, you know, maintaining the messaging, bringing in examples, which are increasing, of course, from competitors and others who are involved or who suffer such an attack, can only help. You know, you've just got to keep at it, I think. There's no magic solution to this.
Right. And let's talk a little bit now about the pandemic. That changed the role of quite a few CISOs, mainly in terms of how they had to adapt very much more quickly than they would ideally have liked. You know, that agility certainly came to the fore. DHL services, I imagine, became even more necessary during that pandemic. I mean, I remember myself making much, much more use of those kinds of services over the last couple of years. How did the pandemic really affect or impact your role, the role of security across DHL?
Probably two ways. One, just in the immediate shift of people working from home. When we talk about, as I say, I mentioned it earlier, the roughly 250,000 people who work at a desktop. Yeah, getting the equipment to home. I mean, one of the things we were quite rigorous on, we didn't allow people to use home equipment. They had to use corporate equipment. Quite a lot of people already had laptops, so they could take those home, but a number of people were using desktops. And so those machines had to be equipped with encryption capabilities so that, you know, BitLocker worked on those machines as they took them home. That was very important to us. And we have very clear stipulations as to what you can and can't connect to a company device. So that provided some technological challenges that we addressed fairly well. At the time, we weren't on Office 365, so we were running our own Skype on-premise capability. So that needed to be scaled up so that people could connect with each other, also scaled up and the connections made in a secure way. So there's a lot of technological challenges to pay attention to. But on the other hand, the behaviors as well. You know, we had to remind people that, you know, they were working from home, so they had to pay attention that family members and others didn't have access to those machines, couldn't look at screens. But one of the biggest shifts, perhaps, was getting people away from paper. You know, right. You don't need to print things out. And if you do at home, make sure you don't leave it on the kitchen table or whatever. So that was, they were some of the things that we had to pay attention to.
And how did you get those messages across, David? Because there'll be people listening to this thinking, well, you know, you've got this sort of remote workforce now, a very large number of them, as you've pointed out. How on earth did you manage to get those messages across and ensure consistency?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've set up communication capabilities. I mean, like many companies, we have an intranet that everybody accesses and have to access first thing in the morning when they sign on. We have a mobile capability as well, which we call Smart Connect, which gives people access to pretty much the same information and perhaps even more on their mobile devices as well. So we have those methods, of course, as email and what have you. However, we also ran an extended number of town halls and online communication. We have internally a program that we call Making IT Easy, MITE, which is simply a series of less than 3-minute videos, a collection of them, a library of them. Now we have thousands of them in the meantime, which tell people how to do things in the moment that they need that information. So they don't have to remember a training that they might have taken 18 months ago, but they want to know, how do I encrypt this? Well, I look it up, you know, for 3 minutes. Anybody can find 2 or 3 minutes to see the video. This is how you do it. Okay, do it and we're done. Let's move on.
Yeah.
So there's some of the vehicles we used. And again, it comes back to persistence as well. Persistence, right. Persistence, persistence.
You know, the key message there for me is this sort of short, sharp, in the moment. So if I need something, I know where to go and get it. It doesn't take a huge amount of time, doesn't break up my working day as such, and is adding value to what I'm doing. I think that's a key message, isn't it?
And one of the other things that we'd spent time building up prior to the pandemic, not because of the pandemic, obviously, like everybody else, we didn't know it was coming, but we have this character called Paula. Paula is the figurehead, the principal lead of information security. And Paula is a very approachable character that regularly, sort of every 2 or 3 weeks, has some sort of message on security. And often those messages are about what to do when you go on holiday and you're doing things on the beach, you know, with, I don't know, Facebook or whatever. So it's not always work related. It's quite lighthearted. And people have found that very engaging as well. So it's not just the corporate CISOs wagging their fingers, but it's somebody talking to them on a peer level, giving them hints and tips of how to protect, you know, it's the same rules that help them protect their personal information as the corporate information, basically. And that has been very helpful as well.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, one of the things that I often talk about is really trying to relate to people in what they're doing outside of work, because that has the benefit inside, you know, particularly if you've got children, for instance. How do you keep them safe online? How do you make sure that you know what they're looking at and so on? So those sorts of things really do strike a chord, don't they?
Yeah, indeed.
One of the things, though, that I think has been unfortunately a common theme for a number of organizations with their people has been burnout. This whole sort of cyber fatigue, because of course there's been a tendency to spend very much more time on a screen, as we're doing now, than you would have done normally. Has that been something that you've had to deal with at DHL?
We have had burnout cases. And in fact, towards the end of last year, they were some of the things I was noticing in various areas that people get. I use the term frazzled. They were still functional, but there was a tenseness that was emerging. And firstly, recognize it, don't deny it, is a very important thing. And, you know, one of the things that, for instance, I do with my team, or my team instigated themselves and I took part too, is that every morning, for instance, we have what we call our wake-up call at 9 o'clock. You know, members of the team can join or not, as the case may be. And there people open up and talk about, you know, over a cup of coffee, what they're working on. You know, if they need help, they mention that, or other concerns that they may have. And that has really, that sharing has really helped breaking the, often the isolation that perhaps people face when they're just staring at a screen, as opposed to, you know, sitting in a community in the office. obviously various events. I mean, you know, you can't have huge get-togethers in, you know, hotel conference rooms, but what we could do and what we did was simply engage in going for a hike, you know, going for a walk. And you can have great conversations with people about their concerns, about their careers, about their project plans whilst you're walking up a hill. In fact, I would submit those conversations are even better than the ones you have in conference rooms. So it's being inventive and listening and responding.
Certainly healthier too, getting people out and about and doing things. So.
Well, that's true too.
Let's sort of look forward now. What are some of the biggest threats that you see emerging at the moment, just generally speaking, that you're concerned about?
My biggest concern is the shifting theatre of international struggles. You know, if you go back far enough, you know, two nations had an argument, they met on the battlefield, they had a bit of a barney with each other, and there was a winner, and that was the end of that. And that, you know, think of Waterloo or whatever it happened to be, it doesn't really matter. And that was horrific enough when we think of some of the things that went on in the, well, in the previous century, and perhaps even in this century. However, the, you know, the damage was, if you will, somewhat isolated to the combatants and the geography where those things happened. Today, we see that A, becoming much more diffused by nation states and other actors causing disruptions across economies and in politics using cyber. And of course, the theater of actions has shifted from the battlefield to the corporate estate, if you will. And so, I mean, as we believe, I mean, or as the research tells us, you know, NotPetya was something that happened, yeah, in the struggle between Russia and Ukraine, and it sort of overspilled into the corporate area. You know, that is A, unpredictable, and B, it's very hard for our current defenses to defend against. Those defenses are set up on a nation state basis, but of course some of these actors don't recognize those borders. So that increasing threat, which manifests itself in things such as ransomware, DDoS attacks, and so on and so forth, the source of that is my biggest concern.
And what are some of the things that you're doing to combat that concern, to deal with those, you know, potential eventualities?
Well, as a company, preparing ourselves, as I say, you know, the communications, the awareness, the simulations for all of those things that can happen, you know, playing out the various scenarios, and of course, technologically improving our defenses, you know, be that on desktops, on servers, at the perimeter, given that the perimeter is still important, paying attention increasingly as well to supply chain risks too. You know, as we say, their security is our security. And that goes beyond perhaps what we classically might have engaged with IT suppliers, but it goes way beyond that. The example I always cite is if our fuel providers, who don't process much of our information or data, so certainly aren't seen as IT providers, but if they can't provide fuel for our jets, then that stops our business moving. So we have to pay attention to the whole supply chain base, not just the technological base.
And what are the sorts of trends that you see in security that excite you, that you're really looking forward to?
The thing that really excites me, actually, and we already talked about it, is the fact that I think our board members say, you know, the one thing that can stop our company in our tracks within minutes is cyber. Mm-hmm. Being at the forefront of that is very risky, perhaps. It means you're engaging with the leadership of the organization and doing something important. You know, the CISO in the past, security in the past, and I was talking to one of my colleagues who had a similar role in the company perhaps 10 or 11 years ago. He's retired in the meantime, and he was recounting how difficult it was simply to get people to use reasonable passwords, and people thought security was just this inconvenient thing in the back corner of IT. And certainly that has changed. We're now front and center, at least in our company. And the engagement that we get from the various boards and board members, managers, senior leaders, all the way down is exciting and engaging.
And if you could give, I don't know, a couple of words of advice to people listening to this, perhaps fellow CISOs or those aspiring to become CISOs, what would they be?
Stay hungry, stay interested, stay excited. you know, you can never stop learning, things change, keep on educating yourself, read, listen, debate, discuss. And one of the things I've really enjoyed as well, I must say, over the last 3 or 4 years, is engaging with CISOs from other companies at the global and regional level, as well as at the domestic level as well. So I'm part of a number of councils and committees that bring folks together to share experiences and share knowledge. And I've learned a tremendous amount by engaging with CISOs, let's say, from the pharmaceutical industry and others from the manufacturing industry. They bring other perspectives and other angles that we can certainly learn from each other as well and support each other.
I think that's a really important point, isn't it? Because, you know, there are so many things that we can learn from other industries, from what other people are doing. I think security has always, for me anyway, been a sort of a fairly holistic industry. I think, you know, it is, as you rightly point out, one that is changing at an incredible pace. And I think the only way we can stay abreast is by sharing along the lines you've just been referring to.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a common base to have a conversation, you know, across companies, but it's not the same everywhere. I mean, obviously, you know, somebody's got manufacturing sites and OT as opposed to IT has got a different set of problems than, let's say, a pharmaceutical company that's defending its research and billions of euros that have been invested there, and a transportation company where we have, you know, huge global reach in every country on the planet, but perhaps we don't have as much IP to protect as a pharmaceutical company. So, as I say, we all have different perspectives and can learn from each other's experiences.
David, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for sharing some of your insights, sharing some of the things that you've been doing at DHL, and some really good examples, I think, for our listeners to think about how they might implement similar approaches in their organizations. So thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for the conversation. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Our thanks to this week's guest, David Thornwell. Next week, we're changing gears a bit. Steve will speak with Mark Gibson, owner and CEO of D3 Technologies, a company that specializes in helping small businesses blend their people, processes, and technology. Here's a preview of that conversation.
If you are someone who is interested in just touching the technology and being the technician, we'll say, who's working on it, there are going to be roles within small businesses where you can do that, but probably not just that. If you want to go to an enterprise, you might be able to be just an engineer or just a SOC analyst, someone who is working on just issues and then passing them along for analysis of business impact and things like that. If you are someone who, like myself, who kind of grew up a little bit in both the technical side and the business side, you don't necessarily want to be tied into just that narrow scope of looking at the issue or seeing an alert and evaluating it. You want to be able to have conversations with business owners and decision makers. And so within the small business arena, you can't specialize as much. You've got to be able to broaden your skill set. You've got to be able to engage with not technical folks all of the time in a way that helps them understand what the issues are.
We'll be back for the full episode in conversation with Steve Durbin and Mark Gibson in a week. In the meantime, if there's a topic or a question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, let us know at securityforum.org, which is also where you can find our catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. Find us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. Follow our audio feed wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll never miss an episode. And if you like the ISF podcast, we'd love it if you'd write a short review. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak, associate producer Katie Flood, mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.